And welcome to Through the Pinard, your conversational podcast talking to midwives around the world about the research they are doing to improve midwifery practice. This research can range from small quality improvement programs and projects to those starting partway through or just finishing their postgraduate studies, and to those that have been there, done that, and got the t-shirt. So settle back and enjoy the conversation. And remember, you can continue the conversation on Twitter after you finish listening. Thank you so much for your time today. And as with everyone else, can you introduce yourself, please?
Hi, Liz. Thank you for having me on this podcast. And hello to all your listeners. My name is Isabella Gatti, and I'm a midwife from Ghana. I'm also a wife and a mother. I have two kids, a seven-year-old and a three-year-old. And at this point, please let me say shout outs to my daughter, because she'll kill me if I don't. Hi, Amaris. Mommy loves you and I miss you so much. Yeah, so I've been a practicing midwife for 14 years now. And currently I'm a PhD student at Charles Darwin University here in Australia. And I began my PhD in March last year. So I'm just about 9 months into it. And it's been an incredible journey so far.
And because you're doing it in another country, you're without your family.
Yes, and I miss them so much. It was, you know, it was very exciting for me to leave my country for the very first time. I've never been abroad. So I was really excited to come to Australia. And then once I got here, I'm like, oh no. I miss my family so much. And my three-year-old wouldn't even say hello to me for weeks.
He was upset.
Yeah.
And that's what a lot of us who are very lucky to be able to do PhD studies in our own country and in our own cities, we don't understand that the amount of added stress of moving to another country, to another culture, to another language, and being by yourself, and that isolation that is required. But also, to me, I'm amazed at the level of dedication that it is to go, I'm doing this, and most people do it because they want to improve their profession kind of back home. So let's talk a little bit first. So what is midwifery back home? So what is the differences that you've noticed between kind of back home and Australia?
Oh, I could talk for like an hour the differences. First of all, I think midwifery back home, we are still very much in the baby phases. Professional midwifery has been in existence since 1960. However, there were very small numbers of midwives. So in the last 20 years, because we had such high maternal mortality, the government instituted measures to increase the number of midwives that we had in the country. And so they started different programs, and then they introduced direct entry pathways into midwifery, what we call the direct midwifery. So I'm actually the second batch of direct midwifery in Ghana.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that's really exciting. And, you know, as a young person going into midwifery, I didn't like it at all. I was practically forced to do it. I applied to do nursing, and then I found myself in midwifery. And so did the rest of my 32 classmates. We all didn't choose it. But then we fell in love with it.
It's hard not to, really, isn't it?
Yes, yes. So currently, we are still trying to find our feet as midwives in Ghana. Midwives in Ghana don't have much of a voice. We have professional midwifery associations that are trying to do advocacy, but our voices are still being stifled by nursing, which is a much larger group. Midwifery in Australia, the little I've seen is very technological. You have all these gadgets that you use. And in Ghana, we have to be very innovative because we don't have half as much the technology. And because Ghana is a low middle income country, we have all these health disparities. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we have all these problems In fact, it is in a country like Ghana that you can actually see what the 4PM, what the main problems of maternal mortality are. All the delays that have been documented are very evident in my country. For example, women in general don't have decision-making power. So even to access maternal health services is a challenge. There are so many delays in getting to the hospital because of our poor road network. In some communities, the transportation is so bad that there's only a vehicle once a week. So if there's a complication or a problem on the next day after the vehicle has left, how does the woman get to the hospital? Then the woman finally is able to get to the hospital. There are so many delays at the hospital. You know, sometimes there's no theater. There could be no blood in the blood bank, no laboratory services. And most women in Ghana complain that they don't receive quality care from midwives. It's quite unfortunate, but the level of practice is not quite to the standard. And so many women report being dissatisfied with the care they receive. And there isn't a very good midwife and woman relationship. Yeah.
So your assessment skills would critical in looking at the picture without technology. So would you use Pinards and Dopplers?
Yes. Very interesting. We have lots of Pinards as backup to the Dopplers, because sometimes okay. few Dopplers and then they can just boom, go off. So we resort to the Pinard. So I have a Pinard. I didn't bring it to Australia, but I have my own Pinard, you know. And sometimes as a midwife working in Ghana, you have to be very sharp with your assessment and take a very good history, because that is actually, the assessment is the basis for all the interventions that you can institute to save the woman's life. And so, you know, your assessment skills must be top notch. And at this point, I want to say that Ghanaian midwives are doing an incredible job. Mm-hmm. Yes, because in the last 20 years, maternal mortality has actually been halved.
Wow.
So our maternal mortality used to be around 760 per 100,000 live births, but currently it's about 318 per 100,000 live births.
That's impressive.
So we still
in 20
have
years.
A long way to go, yeah. But yeah. You're doing a good job.
But that's it. It's, you can only do so much with what you've got, and having now the direct entry kind of focus on, you've still got to be employed. You still have to have, whether it be in the tertiary hospitals or in the village hospitals or the village kind of medical huts or clinics, you've still got to have the women come to you, because unless the women come to you, you can't help them.
Yes, that's right, Liz. And even to further talk about some of the challenges in midwifery, I also want to say that midwives who work in Ghanaian hospitals are not motivated. They are also not supported, and there are few higher educational opportunities. Presently in Ghana, there isn't a single master's in midwifery program. In fact, we recently started the baccalaureate programs in midwifery, and they are not older than 5 years. So you realize that it is diploma programs and certificate programs that are the norm. And according to the WHO, as we know, the standard, the global standard, indicates that it should be at a baccalaureate level, but we are still struggling as it is to introduce more baccalaureate programs in midwifery in Ghana.
And that's it. You need the infrastructure.
Yes.
So you need the infrastructure to supply the education, but you also then need the people who have got the qualifications, who are able to write the curricula
exactly
at that level. And that's the same thing. I mean, I was surprised talking to one of my other podcast people that Canada has no postgraduate midwifery either. So a lot of the midwives that are doing their postgraduates are doing it distance through a lot of the English kind of colleges. And that was quite surprising to me. And they're similar. They're professional. Ooh. Midwifery body is relatively young, so they're still developing and with the history of different countries. And we have gone a lot that growth and the international kind of Congress of Midwives and putting those standards through are going to help bring up the standard and make it so that we do have that minimum level, but it's not easy to do in some countries when you've never had that history.
Exactly. And so I'm actually excited for the next 10 years because I actually see that there's a wave of change coming in Ghana. I'm not the only midwife from Ghana pursuing a PhD in midwifery, and I'm very proud to say that at least I know three midwives from Ghana who will be graduating with their PhDs this year, 2021.
Oh, fabulous.
So that's quite exciting because I know them personally, and I know that they are all about change and they are all hands-on. Let's go back to Ghana. Let's see how we can change things, and let's see how we can introduce more programs and spearhead the midwifery agenda, because the research abounds. I mean, the research can't be wrong. Investing in midwives is actually the best investment.
Yep.
And in a country like Ghana, I think that midwifery is an untapped resource that if we harness, we can actually really bring tangible change, tangible change in maternal health.
Well, if you've already kind of halved it in 20 years, then by the next 20 years, you're going ahead. And I think that's interesting when people look at the maternal mortality rates and a lot of the countries, and they look at it over the trending for the last kind of 50 years, then a lot of the countries that had high have actually decreased it quite a lot, but we're actually now seeing increases in PPH and increases in cesarean sections in the higher resource countries. So that's kind of like the lower resource countries that had the higher rates have decreased in some of those complications, but we're now seeing them increase in the higher resource. So the politics of the countries are coming into play as well, and the medical systems.
Yes, and as I mentioned, although Ghana has done tremendously well and we are all hands on deck in reducing maternal mortality, it still is very much a problem. And for me, no single woman should lose her life bringing a child into this world. When I got to Australia, I realized that you don't say delivery, you actually say birth. So no single woman should lose her life in the process of birth. And it is really unacceptable to me when I see stories of women who have died. And these are husbands losing wives, fathers losing sisters, cousins, friends losing their best friends. And, you know, it's really sad. But the reality is maternal mortality is a problem in Ghana.
What kind of has made you do the big move from home, away from your family, to Australia? Mind you, you've picked Darwin, which is a brilliant city to live in. But what's made you come here to study?
So, Liz, the journey to the PhD actually began, let's say, in 2007 when I enrolled to be a midwife. I mean, I enrolled in the Kolebu Midwifery School to learn to be a midwife. And I knew that I wouldn't practice midwifery forever, but I would certainly venture into academia. And a couple of years down the line, I pursued a degree in nursing because there was no baccalaureate program in midwifery at the time. And then I proceeded to do a master's. And then I said, okay, what next? What do I do with myself? And I had a mentor, Professor Gross. She kept on pushing me in the direction of a PhD. But then there's no PhD in Ghana. And I'm wondering, well, maybe South Africa could be a good option. Mm-hmm. But then there's no PhD in midwifery in South Africa either.
Oh, wow.
All PhD in nursing programs. So I realized I needed to look beyond the shores of Ghana, and the United Kingdom was my first point of call, but it's so difficult to get funding to do midwifery research.
Yeah.
I don't know about the experiences of other midwives, but I applied to numerous programs. I would get admission to most of them, but then no funding.
Yeah.
So we have to go through this roller coaster of seeking funding, and nothing was working. So I'd actually given up, and then someone said, oh, why don't you try Australia? and I'd never really thought about it. And I decided to give it a go. It wasn't a straightforward thing. I applied to a couple of universities and I didn't make it. They said I wasn't a suitable candidate.
Oh.
That really broke my heart. Yes, but I'm so thankful for Charles Darwin University and for the scholarship that came with the admission. Currently, I'm a full-time PhD student. It's not been easy leaving my family behind, but I love research. I think I'm a nerd. I love research. This is something I've always wanted to do. And I don't find it tasking. I actually enjoy it.
Yep.
It's a love relationship between my laptop and I.
I can 1,000% understand that. I've got multiple screens and get excited when I've got spreadsheets and doing data analysis. And yeah, but they need people like us to kind of keep the research coming.
Yes, they absolutely do.
So what research are you now doing for your PhD then?
So my research is, I'm all about improving midwifery services in Ghana and in other low and middle income countries. But specifically, my research is focused on pre-eclampsia management. The thing is that, Liz, in Ghana, pre-eclampsia is gradually becoming the main cause of maternal mortality. So the two main causes in Ghana are postpartum hemorrhage and pre-eclampsia. But now the trend is we are seeing more and more cases of hypertensive disorders, particularly pre-eclampsia. And what makes it very alarming is that almost 90% of the women who develop pre-eclampsia and are managed in Ghanaian hospitals have unfavorable outcomes at alarming levels. Yes, so we are losing moms, we are losing babies, and we are having long-term complications associated with pre-eclampsia. So that's my passion. Pre-eclampsia is my passion. I stood in class teaching one day because in the last 5 years, I was lecturing in a private university in Ghana. And I stood in class teaching and I'm like, I just had an aha moment in class. And I'm like, yeah, this is it. It's pre-eclampsia. That is it for me. Because I have worked with teams where we have managed women with pre-eclampsia very well and we have seen good outcomes. So I know that it is possible. I know that if we do the right things, we can get the results that we are looking for. So that's what I'm here to look at.
When you're looking at the management, is it the team management? So I know that we've kind of got protocols and algorithms and we've got magnesium sulfate infusions, but I also know that in the World Health Management and Preparation Book for low-resource countries, they look at magnesium sulfate injections and trying to manage that's easier. So is that what you're looking at, is what's available for the resources and when it's instigated, or a bigger umbrella picture?
I'm actually looking at a very broader picture in terms of the management. Actually, I'm exploring multi-level factors that influence the midwife's management of pre-eclampsia. So it is well known that the management of pre-eclampsia is a team-based effort. Yes, that's true. But in Ghana, midwives are the majority of health providers given maternal health services. Yep. So what it means is that even in the remotest place, in the health center, it is the midwife who will first come in contact with the pregnant woman. And so her assessment skills must be key. Once she's able to detect preeclampsia, that woman will be moved on to a higher level of care.
Mm-hmm.
But for the scope of this PhD project, I'm looking at how do midwives manage preeclampsia across, and what are the factors that influence their management? So I'm looking at the individual midwife level, what are the factors that influence the midwife's management of preeclampsia. I'm also looking broader at the hospital level or at the healthcare institution level. What are the factors? Is it that maybe, for example, the protocols are not consistent, they are not available, drugs are not available? What exactly is the problem? And then I also intend to look at the wider policy framework. What is the midwives obviously are operating within a health context where there are certain policies, there are certain standards of practice, there's a whole policy framework that governs our practice. So is that policy framework favorable to the midwife's practice in Ghana? Is that supportive of her management and all of that? So actually, that's what I intend to look at in the scope of this project. When I arrived in Australia and I met my supervisors and I told them my idea, and then one of them, she said, "Oh, Isabella, you want to change the world."
But that's good, but contained.
Yes, and I said, "I don't want to change the world. I just want to change Ghana."
We'll start with Ghana, and then we'll kind of spread out and then change the world. So within that, so that's going to be by interviews?
I'm doing so many things. I don't even know how I'm going to finish. So I'm actually going to have interviews with the midwives themselves and then interviews with key experts. And I'm also going to examine documents to look at the policies and all of those things. And then to be able to assess the midwife's knowledge in a very objective way, midwives will be invited to fill a survey, which will also go to assess what their training needs are. Because as part of the PhD and to identify the gap for which my PhD would focus, I conducted a scoping literature review, which has been accepted by Women and Birth and is currently in press.
Excellent. We'll link that to the podcast when we publish.
Great. And in that review, we actually found that continuing professional development has a great potential to improve the midwife's knowledge and management of preeclampsia, but has not been explored. So we don't even know what the midwife's training needs related to preeclampsia are. So the survey also captures not just what do they know about it, but what would they like to have improved in terms of their knowledge, and how do they think that maybe organizational changes or just training alone could do.
The country that you've got to deliver healthcare to is quite varied.
Yes.
In that you've got urban cities, the same as kind of like every country, you've got city and rural, but your rural is quite rural, can be quite poor, can be quite difficult to get to with, if you've got poor roads, and I'm thinking of some of the roads that I've saw in Zimbabwe with some pictures, and that was not even graded, full of potholes, and when it rained with the kind of came through, they weren't passable. And that all influences how healthcare can get delivered as well as education can get delivered.
It does, it does. And the main problem is that in Ghana, in the rural areas, when women attend health facilities and are diagnosed with complications, they're actually referred to the higher tertiary institutions that are in the capital cities. But there's already so much cultural and traditional beliefs associated with big hospitals. Many women refuse to actually be referred to a higher level of care. Most of the time, I don't blame the women. It is because they are afraid of hospitals. They prefer to actually seek care in the church or have a traditional birth attendant attend to them. Also because in the hospital, the whole thing about birth is so medicalized and the women do not have a say. They are not consulted in their care. And there is a big problem with respectful maternity care. In fact, respectful maternity care is almost missing. It is not a Ghanaian concept. So the midwives and obstetricians just dictate.
Is that modern or traditional? So with traditional birthing practices, was it that's the women, you had a traditional birth attendant, they had control? Did they stay in the area and the villages, or did they kind of go away and separate themselves for birthing?
So most of the time, the women would stay in the communities, but then they would have a traditional birth attendant who lives in the community. Yep. So she would offer all the care. And most women are more comfortable with that model. Yep. So as I do my PhD and as I sit here in Australia, I'm kind of thinking that Ghana actually needs to move to more of like community-based midwifery and midwifery group practice, because honestly, the women, that is what they prefer. That is what they want. They do not want hospitals.
Mm.
They don't want to see all these gadgets. And they certainly don't want to have all these procedures to follow and all of that. They want to be comfortable in their home environment with their family. So home births is actually something that Ghanaian women have been asking for a very long time.
Mm.
Yeah.
And that's it. You've kind of got it in a default model with the traditional birth attendants. But yes. If you could get the midwives in there together, and then you would have that continuity of care, which we know is kind of best practice. But also, I know that talking, one of my master's students is from Papua New Guinea. And so we're talking about similar things of the distance and getting through and transportation, but also the cultural belief of the women in the rural areas are very much going to they know the people, the traditional birth attendants, they'll do the traditional healing. And then they delay going to the hospital, A, because it costs as well to see the doctor. It costs to get the medication. So they will delay, which means they're sicker by the time that they go visit the doctor or the hospital. And then by the time they get admitted to the hospital, they are quite sick. And so their whole experience has been, if you go to a hospital, you die. And they don't want to do that because things have delayed so much that it's harder.
Oh,
yeah. And so you can go, I understand why you don't want to go to a hospital. And mind you, we've still got COVID around. And that is the same thing that's happening to a lot of people now, that they don't want to go to the hospitals because there's so much COVID. They don't want to get it. And people have survived at home, gone to hospital for another reason, got COVID and end up dying. So you can understand that situation. So what is the community, the rural community healthcare centres like? So that would be what, a midwife with a room that she can look after and birth in?
Yes. So actually at the community or very rural level, we usually have what we call the CHIPS compound. And then we have the health post and health center. So usually at a CHIPS compound, the woman is just seen for routine antenatal, but there's not going to be any detention or any admission at that level.
Yep.
So just a building, or maybe just a room that the community members themselves provide for the midwife to be able to. So she lives there, actually. It's her apartment and it's also her workspace. So she's there 24/7 round the clock.
So that's like our remote nurses out in Australia, kind of indigenous areas. Yep.
Yeah. And then at a health post, it's a midwife working alongside community health nurses. And so they are providing care to the pregnant woman, but they are also providing basic child welfare services like routine weighing of the infant and providing nutritional support and all of those things. And then at the health center level, which is like a community clinic, but slightly bigger. So the midwife has her consulting room where she sees the pregnant woman. At that health center level, she also does the birth. So lots of deliveries go on at that health center level. And then they also provide other services like child welfare clinics, in addition to other non-obstetric other non-maternal health services like routine care for communities or care for elderly people and that sort of thing. So you realize that midwives who work in the very basic levels multitask a lot. So they are not just there to take care of the pregnant woman or woman, but they are also there to take care of the needs of families and children and elderly people. And if there's a snake bite or anything, it is the midwife who is called, so she has to wear many hats in the community.
So how does that work with the direct entry education then? Because before the direct entry, they would have had to have been nurses and have the nursing background and then the obstetric background. But if you've now gone to direct entry, and I'm just thinking of our direct entry in the different pathways, that's a whole pile of stuff we don't teach in the direct entry course.
So yeah, but fortunately we do.
Okay.
So what we do is that it's a 3-year diploma in midwifery. And what happens is in the first year, you are actually taking through general nursing. So it's like a crash course of general nursing. So we have all these medical nursing, surgical nursing, all the nursing basics we are taking through in the first year. And then from the second year, you actually begin the midwifery course.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, so we have a foundational knowledge in nursing. And then, so because they're actually training you to multitask and do all these roles. So that is how the direct entry program currently is. The curriculum is such that there's a nursing component and then you continue on with the midwifery.
Which you have to, because to survive. Yeah. So how's that going to be stepped up for the baccalaureate program then? So they'll just still keep the same, the first year's general nursing, and then you'll have, 3 years midwifery focused?
Yes. So that's the difference. In the baccalaureate program, the first year to maybe the first semester of the second year is general nursing focused. And then from there, they actually do more midwifery courses up to the fourth year. So in the fourth year, there's actually a great chunk dedicated to domiciliary midwifery practice, where the midwifery students spend a lot of time in the community. They live there. They offer services to the community members for a couple of months. And then they also have their senior research project in midwifery.
So like an internship?
Yes.
And then a residential?
Yeah.
Oh, cool. So what type of research are those students now starting? Because that's the start of the future kind of establishment of evidence-based practice. So what research projects have you seen for them?
Well, I haven't seen any for my students, because in the university where I used to teach, as at the time I was leaving, our first batch of the baccalaureate program were now going to their second year.
Okay.
So we are just now in the course of it. But I also talk with some of my colleagues who are in the government universities who have actually churned out a batch or two of the baccalaureate program. And they say that the midwifery students were very much interested in looking at concepts like respectful maternity care, how to facilitate normal birth, which I find quite interesting because currently in Ghana, there is a preference for cesarean section births. Most women avoid or want to avoid vaginal birth for fear of their lives. You know, they think that cesarean section is the safer option. And so we are seeing a very high incidence of cesarean sections, and women that actually need to have cesarean section may not get them, and it leads to so many problems because most cesarean sections are elective.
Yeah.
The women choose to have cesarean birth. So it's a good thing that midwifery students are interested in looking at how can we facilitate vaginal birth. I find that very interesting.
Is that going to link in with the increasing rates of PPH with preeclampsia as well, having pre-existing C-sections and looking at some of the comorbidities? Do you think that there's a linkage there?
Well, there could be a link there. However, what I'm trying to say is most of the women who actually want to have elective CS do not have any pre-existing condition.
Okay.
There's actually no risk factor. There's actually no specific indication. However, they think that if I have a cesarean section, I just go in and then they take the baby out and I go home because, yes, I've remembered the reason. One study actually found that there is a reason for this. Pain management in Ghanaian hospitals for labor is so poor.
Yeah.
It's so poor. So many women don't feel confident about vaginal birth because if they ask questions about pain relief, there isn't any pain relief.
Mm.
So they actually think that, well, let me have a cesarean section with anesthesia and follow up with opioids and I escape the pain. I think it's a mindset, and we need to actually change the mindset of Ghanaian women. Vaginal birth for me is safe.
Mm.
There are no long-term complications with vaginal birth compared to that of cesarean section. And it's actually a positive birth experience, much more than cesarean section births are. But now there's this trend and like we have to do something about it.
So what's next steps for your PhD?
So I've actually had my ethics approved.
Yahoo!
And that was just before we had the Christmas party, the virtual Christmas party, that is.
That's excellent timing.
Yes. So I intend to travel to Ghana in the next couple of weeks, let's say by the end of January, for data collection. Initially, we had plans of collecting some of the data on Zoom, but then it's not going to work. The internet is not reliable. I have tried it. It's just not working. And the data is actually the bedrock of my PhD study. I can't mess it up. So I had a discussion with my supervisory panel, and we realized the best thing is for me to go to Ghana to collect data. Thankfully, the COVID situation in Ghana is not quite as bad. It's well managed. And so I will be leaving for Ghana in a few weeks to collect data and then take it up from there. So I'm actually excited about the next phase, which is data collection.
And are you going to be able to kind of get a visit home and spend some time home while you're data collecting?
The great part is, or the best part is, I'm actually going to be living home and collecting data.
Oh, fabulous.
Meeting. So, yeah, that's good. I get to spend time with my family as well. And, it's the best thing.
And then you'll come back to Australia in a few months once you hopefully get let back in again.
Yeah,
the whole quarantine thing that everyone needs to do at the moment.
Yeah.
So that'll be good. So then you'll have some interviews. You'll have a whole pile of notes on documentation.
Yes.
And so then for the next year, when you come back, you'll just be analysing
and writing.
Which is where the kind of the excitement, you can get lost down that rabbit hole of that do the transcription. Mm-hmm. And then you kind of go, oh, they've said this, and oh, someone else has said, oh, look, and there's a kind of thread that you can kind of go off on, which is kind of cool. Have you thought about the structure? So thinking about writing, have you thought about your chapter kind of like structure? Are you going to do, at the moment, tentatively, your midwife interviews, then your expert interviews, and then your data? Are you going to do them separately, or are you going to do them kind of blending into each other, or you're not really sure yet?
I'm very sure.
Oh, good. Oh, okay.
I'm actually doing a qualitatively driven mixed method.
Okay.
So what it means is that the main midwife interviews are going to be the main thing that I will report, and it's going to be supported by the policy documents, the expert interviews, and the survey.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of have the whole structure in my mind. However, each of the analyses are going to be done separately.
Yep.
And then in the interpretation phase, that is when I'll try to bring them together. I'm actually doing a PhD by publication.
Okay.
And so each phase of data collection for me represents a paper on its own, independent of the interpretation phase. And so I kind of have the whole thing mapped out in my head, but you know, you can have a plan but that's my plan for now.
I started in one topic, COVID hit, and I've kind of gone in a slightly different way because of COVID, so I get that as well. And of course, we're kind of talking on Zoom, so at the moment we can see each other and people can only hear us. And I'm very surprised you do not have things on your walls about reminders and things. So I'm envious of your walls being quite clear, but I'm sure that might change later on.
Yeah.
So considering you are away from home, Darwin really hasn't been locked down with COVID, really. So between Darwin and Western Australia, kind of shutting borders quite fast. How have you been maintaining your mental health and your physical health whilst you've been like in a place with no family, kind of making new friends and colleagues? How are you finding that balance?
Oh, I love parties. I sign up for all the parties. Even parties with undergraduate students. I just love parties. So everybody knows me as the party girl. I sign up for all the parties. And I'm the only African with a very bad dance rhythm, but I try. And so I just like to unwind. I'm also doing lots of window shopping. I love to do window shopping. And it keeps my sanity intact. Like when I do window shopping, I just get lost in the world of items.
It's cheap too, window shopping.
Yes, yes. And talking with my family has, I thank God so much for the internet and for technology, because I've been able to see my kids every day, talk to my husband every day, talk to my mom. My family has been a great support. In this PhD journey, it takes a village.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
It's a village of support. And I have met wonderful people in Australia, really wonderful. And yeah, so I unwind by partying, by shopping, by watching Netflix and talking to my family.
You're into 9 months. You've got your data collection kind of coming up. You've then got your analysis kind of coming up. So in a couple of years, you're going to be finished. You're going to be Dr. Isabella. You're going to be back home, apart from changing Ghana. What do you want to do with your PhD? Like, practically, what do you want to, once you've got it, you've got that information, what do you actually then want to do when you go back home for good?
Difficult question. Yeah, but I don't know. I just think that I just want to make a change. I don't know how, but I know that I want to see things changed. And after my PhD, when I have acquired the necessary skills to do research, one of the ways I can bring a change is to do more research. In Ghana, research is such a thing and people avoid it.
Yep.
It looks like such a task and people just can't understand what the whole thing is about. And I really intend to demystify this whole research thing, get more people on board, get us to do more midwifery research. I quite remember being taught in school that a profession has its own body of knowledge.
Yes.
And then I asked my professor, but where's the midwifery body of knowledge? We don't have enough African textbooks on midwifery. We don't have Ghanaian textbooks on midwifery.
Yeah.
We don't have the research to spearhead these things. So I see myself doing more research and bringing more people to join me. We have a thing in Africa, we say we can't suffer alone. So we bring more people to join.
Well, you've got your colleagues, which I'm gonna later on after we've finished kind of recording, I'm going to hit you up for their names to kind of interview them as well. But, and that's it, is getting what you're doing out to other people, be it through podcasts, through publications, through conferences when we get back to doing them again. And also through the other information that I love is the virtual International Day of the Midwife.
Yes.
Which they go through on the 4th, 5th and 6th of May. Yes. And a couple of years ago I did a presentation with them and I'm hoping to be facilitating, because I think that's brilliant as well. It's a long 24 hours to stay awake and listen, but the amount that you learn about what's happening in other countries is astronomical. Mm-hmm. So you could do the same thing and kind of like have African versions of that to share information around.
Yes, that's true. And I'm also currently involved in advocacy. So I have partnered with Action on Preeclampsia Ghana. And as part of that, I am a member of their newsletter committee. So we are actually churning out newsletters on preeclampsia and hypersensitive disorders of pregnancy every quarter. And our target audience include women, pregnant women, communities, and health professionals. And one of the segments of this newsletter, we have a segment called Midwife Spotlight. And I'm so excited to be writing that spotlight, because we actually get to showcase phenomenal midwives transforming communities, doing awesome things.
Brilliant.
And just to break the barrier, just to let the women know we are here for you. We want you to come. You know, we are going to give you very good service, respectful maternity care. And yeah, just to bring midwives and women closer together, because we are in this together.
Yeah, which is fabulous. Do the women, I know that in the Philippines, that when women come to give birth, they've got to bring all their own equipment, their own nappies, their own, in fact, their own medication as well, and then they come to hospital. Is that the same in Ghana as well, that if you get admitted to hospital, you got to bring your own medication?
Well, as part of the efforts to reduce maternal mortality, the government introduced the free maternal delivery policy.
Okay.
10 years ago. And the aim of that policy was to subsidize the cost of birth for women. So that policy actually caters for the financial cost of the birth. However, there are issues with the policy here and there, but women still have to bring items for the birth.
Yep.
So as a woman, the woman needs to actually get a list from the hospital. And on that list, it's like bring the nappies, the baby clothes, and all of those things. But the drugs are also part of that free maternal delivery policy.
Good.
Because healthcare financing is a major barrier. And it's one of the reasons why women were not coming. Mm. So the drugs are expensive. And the policy tries to cater for those drugs as well. However, we are also seeing shortages of drugs. So on the flip side, although women are not supposed to pay for the drugs, we don't have the drugs, so the women have to procure the drugs out of pocket. Yeah.
And that's a whole other issue of
it is
a much, much larger issue to kind of go through it. So if they were kind of like, hopefully there'll be some Ghanaian midwifery students that listen to this, as well as other students in other countries around, what would be your advice to, if they're thinking of researchers, oh, I don't really understand it, but I need to do it, what words of wisdom can you give to them?
Research is actually something that can change people's lives. And once you look at it from that perspective, you'd see that, oh, if we can change somebody's life, then it's actually not a bad thing. It's actually a good thing. And you need to find a mentor. In Africa, I think that part of our lack of research problem is because we do not have research mentors.
Yep.
You need to find yourself a research mentor and or a support group, something that will actually stimulate your interest, guide you in the process, and you'd have a very good or positive experience. It's not so scary. It's actually a good thing. And I actually see that in the next few years, there'll be much more research coming from Africa.
Mm.
Very top-notch, very high-quality research that can be used to inform policy and change things.
And that's going to be exciting because you're already establishing the links in other countries while you're doing your doctorate. You've got your colleagues who are kind of finishing. They're going to be starting up with their links. So then you will actually have international links to help support your founding research kind of blossoming in Ghana.
Exactly. So that's the silver lining. The fact that there isn't any PhD program in Ghana for midwifery, but we all have the opportunity to travel abroad and get this world-class education and build this network that we are going to tap into for the future. And so for me, that's a very good thing. I'm so grateful to be here and to meet all the people I have met, including PhD midwives on Twitter. Yeah, it's a great thing.
And it's a nice little global community that will continue, whether you've kind of finished and starting, it's always going to be there to tap into.
Yes.
And to kind of put up and go, hi, anyone interested in kind of collaborating in this or got some information? And I think that's the good side to technology when it works.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you so much for kind of chatting today.
Thank you, Liz, for having me. I had a good time and look forward to engaging more with your podcast, engaging more with PhD midwives around the world, and just doing the little we can one day at a time.
That's all we can do, because a small stone puts a ripple that can change a kind of like the water flow.
Yeah, exactly.
Thank you for joining us today. You'll find all the links on Twitter, Instagram, and on the podcast website. If you are a midwife and you would like to share your research, your postgraduate studies, or even the quality improvement projects you are doing now, then email me at throughthepinard@gmail.com. Send me a tweet or send me a DM.